Hey, what up? Welcome in. This is All Ball, all basketball, all the time. We have Mark Titus who's going to join us on this week's All Ball. That's right, Club Trill, part of Titus and Tate, which is another podcast. He does a great job. Former walk-on, Ohio State. A little bit of his life story that he's going to share with us. Not talking a lot of college hoops, whatever, but really kind of interesting how Club Trill became Club Trill. We'll get to that upcoming. First, though, I want to give you a couple of college basketball thoughts, nuggets, if you will, and then give you my thoughts on both LeBron and his dominating performance over Zion and the Lakers and Zion Williamson, what you're seeing. First, in terms of college basketball, we do this thing where nothing's kind of ever good enough. I would generally tend to agree if you said that this year's Gonzaga team would lose to last year's Gonzaga team. I've never actually seen any tournament where one team has to play against previous year's teams anyway, right? So with that in mind, why do we operate under this hard and fast stance that there are no great or dominant teams? Let's take Kansas, right? Let's take Kansas. Kansas is 25-3 in the Big 12. One of those losses was to Duke in November, November 5th. So do I think they're better than Duke now? Sure. Do I think Duke's improved now? Sure. But that's one of their wins. We say no great teams. They beat Dayton. They beat Colorado. Those are two NCAA tournament teams. Dayton will probably be a two seed. Colorado, who by many people's observations might be the best team or second best team in the Pac-12. They've had some up and down losses. They lost to Nova. That's always a bad matchup for them, and game was not played at home. They lost to Baylor at home. After losing to Baylor, they've gone on to not lose a game since the 12th of January. We're almost into March. They beat Baylor at Baylor. They beat West Virginia at West Virginia. We'll see what they do against Texas Tech last game of the year, but Texas Tech, of course, reached the Final Four last year. Pretty much shredding everyone in their stead. So why do we not consider them a great team? Because they lost a game in the Big 12? Why is Gonzaga not a great team? Because they lost a game to BYU? Like, past Gonzaga teams have been great teams, have lost a game to BYU or to St. Mary's. That doesn't make any sense to me. We hold teams of the past up as if they're some gold standard that is unattainable. But guess what? These teams don't have to compete against those teams. Against this year's competition, I find it hard-pressed to not think that Gonzaga, that Kansas, even San Diego State, that's petered out a little bit here down the stretch, are great teams in comparison to the field. Two more things on college basketball. I find it fascinating that we bail on so many teams and so many coaches. I look at what Mick Cronin is doing at UCLA. Now, the time of this recording, it's a Wednesday. On Thursday night, they take on Arizona State, and it appears that Bobby Hurley has a chance to put Arizona State back in the NCAA tournament, which, again, nothing short of amazing. It does help St. Mary's out. St. Mary's beat them by a million. I have my own thoughts on Arizona State and Alonzo Verge, who's, that guy can get buckets. He's had some crazy, crazy outbursts. And considering some of the flaws in personnel that Bobby has, to have this level of success is nothing short of remarkable. And look, they had some tough times early in the season. But UCLA's won 9 of 11. They just beat Colorado at Colorado. And it's not close to the, not just level of talent, but type of player that I would think Mick Cronin will ultimately get at UCLA. I mean, they already have the top point guard in the Western United States coming in next season. So it's weird. Cronin wins a ton of games at UCLA, and now they're creeping back in the NCAA tournament conversation. In any other league in the country, you win 9 out of 11, you get in the field, don't you? So we do this weird thing where for some teams, for some conferences, I used to call it the preseason, the non-conference slate matters. For some, it does not. Do I think the Pac-12 is great? No. I think Oregon and Colorado are very good. I think Arizona's talented, but super young. I think Arizona State is a team that lost a lot from last year, losing Lou Dort and some other pieces, but is probably NCAA tournament worthy. Washington, which was very good to start the year, but they lost their point guard. They've been a disaster ever since. It's like, okay, I would agree with you. UCLA was not good early in the year, but Stanford was, and they're a better team than Stanford. Right? Washington was. Granted, Washington lost their point guard. Now they're better than... Am I making sense? I don't know if I'm making sense. I just... Part of me is impressed by UCLA. They've done it without some sort of home court advantage. They've done it without getting their own players, per se. And they've just done it with digging in, changing some of it, playing Jaquez. You know, playing the two young shooters really, really helps them. They found just enough offense. And, of course, you know mixed teams are going to compete and play defense. UCLA has suddenly become one of my fascinating watches. What happens to them on Selection Sunday? Let's see what happens to them when the Arizona schools come calling this week. All those UCLA fans are like, not into the Mick Cronin thing. This team stinks. They should come back in droves this weekend to Poly. Last thing. I've always been big on Cole Anthony. I'm not as big now. He's athletic, but not crazy athletic. He still doesn't shoot it that well. He'll shoot it better. He's incredibly competitive, and he's a scoring lead guard, which I think he'll be at the next level. And I know he's not surrounded by great talent, but, man, I saw him on tape a bunch leading up to the Louisville game, and I saw him I saw him in the Louisville game, and I wasn't blown away. There's talent there. He should play in the NBA. But I would have thought he's a starting guard in the NBA from day one, and I'm not totally convinced. I feel there's a little bit of Austin Rivers to him. A little bit of Austin Rivers to him. A better shooter than Austin Rivers, but a guy who, like Austin, some guys don't like playing with, like Austin, kind of competitive to a fault, and I'm not sure that you get the total buy-in to others.
Hey guys, Doug Gottlieb, and I recently had a chance to try out HelloFresh. It's hands down my favorite meal kit delivery service. It's not only delicious, but I save so much time by not going to the grocery store. You know, it gets delivered right to your door, and my kids get excited because they don't know what recipes are in there. They don't know what we're going to make. Then we open up the box, and it's like a Christmas Day surprise. Our favorite recipe so far is the Bavette Steak and Sherry Shallot Sauce. It's got garlic, parmesan, potato clusters, roasted green beans. It's amazing. If you like Baja Shrimp Tacos, those are yum too. Look, week after week, we all look forward to my HelloFresh delivery because who wants to go out and pay exorbitant prices? I like cooking, but I don't have the ideas for what to make. And oh yeah, by the way, all the portions are already prepared. Cuts out all that other stuff. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit for a reason. I think it'll be yours too. So try it yourself at HelloFresh.com/allball10. Use the code ALLBALL10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/ALLBALL10. Use the code ALLBALL10 and you get 10 free meals and shipping.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome him in. He's Club Trill to so many of you. He's Mark Titus, I believe, on his birth certificate. Is it Marcus or Mark?
It is Mark, yeah. Yeah, it is Mark. Marcus. There's no Marcus.
So you're not one of those upset, you know, white guy with a black guy name?
No. I get asked that a lot. My name is Mark. Marcus would have been a lot cooler, though. That would have been definitely awesome. But it's just Mark, unfortunately.
You grew up where?
I grew up in Indianapolis, the west side of Indianapolis, Brownsburg, Indiana. It's most famous for being the home of Gordon Hayward now. I was 2 years older than Gordon, and Gordon, when I played with him, Gordon was like 5'9", 5'10", or something like that, and must have weighed 130 pounds. And then as soon as I graduated, he hit his growth spurt and became great. So, yeah, that's home to me.
Okay, so how good were you?
This is a tough question to answer. I scored 1,000 points in high school. I was getting recruited by smaller schools. Your Indiana States of the world, your UNC Wilmington, I think, was one that was. I almost went to Harvard, but then they weren't giving scholarships, and my parents were looking at me like, "How the hell are we going to pay for that?" And then it kind of fell through anyway. So I was good enough to play.
What do you mean fell through? Hold on, you're going to give like I gave you the ugly details of
through.
UCLA.
So here's what happened.
Did you get into Harvard?
I got a letter that said you're not declined yet, which was like pretty good.
That's
you know,
really
where I'm
good.
From in the middle of nowhere, Indiana. That was a big deal.
So why not?
Okay, so here what happened. They were recruiting me, and they don't give scholarships, so they can't say they're not like, we're going to give you a scholarship. It's just like, if you come here, we might put you on the team type situation.
How good were your grades?
I was a pretty good student. I was a good student. I was a 4.0 student. Yeah, I was
like, you had no B's 4.0?
Yeah, like no B's. Like, I never had any B's. I my parents were both teachers, so like I had to just like beat into me from childhood. Like, you will get A's or we'll kill you. And so I was a good student. And I was getting recruited by Harvard, and I'll never forget this. I the Harvard coaches were coming out to see me one more time because they were following me on the AAU circuit. I played AAU with Odin and Conley and Daquan Cook and Eric Gordon and Josh McRoberts and all these other guys. We were
team name?
Spieth Indy Heat. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest AAU teams of all time. I would say the greatest, but whatever.
Okay, wait. So give me the team. We'll go back to the Harvard thing. This
okay.
Now you wet my apple.
No, yeah. No,
you started playing with this team when? How old were you?
I was in eighth grade. Yeah.
You show up in the gym and there's Greg Oden, first time you saw him.
Yeah,
and
I was actually probably better than Greg at the time. I was 6'4 in eighth grade. I'm 6'4 now. So I would describe my eighth grade game as like Kevin Love. Peak Kevin Love was like how I played.
So you grew
in eighth
early?
Grade. Yeah. Yeah. I could dunk. I could shoot threes. People thought I was going to be like 6'10 and great, and then I just stopped growing. So, That's how I got on the team in the first place, was that they were just putting together all the best players of Indiana.
Okay, so eighth grade, all these guys are on the team.
Right, yeah. Well, no, in eighth grade, it was not yet McRoberts, and I think that's it. Like, we added McRoberts later. He was a year older than us.
Josh McRoberts,
yeah.
That's an amazing team.
For the most part, we were together the whole time. Like, I would say like 80% of us were together the entire run through like eighth grade all the way through high school.
Yeah, so I was fourth grade. There's a league here called NJB. I played in the first NJB games. Fourth grade NJB championships. I played against Miles Simon. Mm. And here's a fun fact that he does not like shared. I think halftime of the championship game, they had a three-point shooting contest, and I actually beat Miles.
No kidding.
Yeah, in a three-point shooting contest, which of course people look at it, no way. And then after the game, my dad talked, and he started playing with like it was a traveling team back then.
Yeah.
So he and I were teammates, and we had a bunch. It was all Orange County kids, and then slowly but surely, and we had a couple LA kids, and then slowly but surely we added, by the time Miles was a rising senior, we had, I was point guard, Miles was a wing.
Yeah.
Kriston Johnson, it's Chris Johnson, who's Marcus's son. He played obviously at UCLA. Mm. He was a forward. J.R. Henderson was like a wing. Milton Henderson Jr. from Bakersfield, he was a All-American. He went to UCLA. He still plays in Japan. I think I told you this in your pod.
Yeah.
Tony Gonzalez played with us. Like, we had a squad. But we weren't all together from like eighth grade.
Yeah.
Like, Miles and I, we played together since fourth grade.
That's what...
So eighth grade, you got Daquan Cook. Eighth grade, you got Mike Conley.
Yes. Eighth grade, Greg Oden. That's what made us so good, too, is like everyone, like as I've gotten older, everyone just wants to hear about the guys that played in the NBA. I honestly think our second unit of guys that no one's ever heard of, like we could wreck anybody in A because we played together for so long.
Sure.
Like, and we did that a lot. Like, there'd be times where like Mike and Greg couldn't make it for something, and we would still just like wipe the floor with people because we played together. You know how all these A, like you said, they're just kind of thrown together, a lot of these teams. So yeah, I think we had on our final team, we had 13 guys, I want to say, on the roster, and I think 11 of them played Division I basketball, and 5 of them played in the NBA.
And you obviously could have played Division I basketball.
Yeah.
You chose to.
I mean, I technically did, Doug. Come on.
Yes, but I mean, two-way scholarship.
Right.
No, but I'm saying, like my brother was like one of those. I remember he grew up in Orange, California, and like he was offered like Jackson. I'm saying like Jackson State,
right?
And like he's like,
yeah, that was
he wanted
for
to
me,
walk on at UCLA. You
that
know?
Was for me was like I really had took an honest look at myself, and I was like, do I like basketball enough to go play at a small school? Because my dad played it. My dad played like NAIA college. Like
what school?
Where did he play? He played at Hanover, I know, in Indiana, and then he played at like Southeast Missouri State or something, I want to say. He was bouncing all around because he grew up in the glory days of Indiana high school basketball when he was playing in front of like 7,000 people in high school. And my dad was playing in all the biggest gyms you hear about in Indiana. My dad was like in the 70s playing in these gyms. And then he would tell me these stories about how like he just had it in his head. He's like, I got to keep this going. Like, this thing is awesome. And then he wasn't that great. So he went to a smaller school, and he would just say like, it was the worst experience ever because it was such a step down and all that. So I just kind of had that in my head. Like, do I? And he's like, if you're going to do this, Mark, you have to really, really love basketball. You have to, you have to be super into the competitiveness and all that. And I was like, I don't think I am. I don't think I'm that like into basketball to go to like a smaller school and play in front of like. I could have gone Division I for sure. It's just like I could have gotten a Division I scholarship place. I honestly, there's a lot of schools I would call and I would just tell them I'm not interested. Like, I don't know. Evansville is one of them. I remember Evansville called me, and I was like, I'll be honest with you. I've grown up in Indiana my whole life. Like, I don't want to go to Evansville, but thank you, Coach. I appreciate it. So there's a lot of that. I didn't think I was, like, better than them. I was like, I probably am an Evansville player.
Yes.
But I just, like, I don't like basketball enough to go to school.
No, it's an interesting, it's a fascinating thing. You know, in high school, like, I didn't go to Mater Dei. Mater Dei is the... Like when we're recording this, they play Sierra Canyon on Friday. It'd be like the big. They got a kid, Devin Askew, who's going to Kentucky as their point guard. Mater Dei has been the factory in Orange County. What Sierra Canyon is now, Mater Dei.
I know of Mater Dei.
Well, I'm saying for people who are listening, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, like you go and you track from Stanley Johnson, Miles Simon, LaRon Ellis, Mike Hopkins. I'm like all the way, you know, Cedric Bozeman. Like they've all played Mater Dei. Anyway, so. You know, Miles and Clay McKnight was the coach's son, and Darren Height, and all these guys that I played with growing up, younger than us, older than us, they all went to Mater Dei. And I didn't want to go there because I wanted to play.
Right.
And I wanted to play varsity, like, as a freshman, sophomore. You know, like, that's what I wanted to do. And I understand. And I also didn't, the idea of your parents paying for somebody else to play.
Right.
You know, like, if I'm going to pay, I want to play.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
So I totally get that because, but I... The opposite, like, we didn't win a state championship. We went pretty far. But and there's limitations. But I enjoyed the playing more and the fanfare more. And then, you know, that's a decision. It's a hard decision. But it's interesting the understanding yourself and what you were into.
Right.
You were into being around the – So let's go back to the Harvard story.
Yeah, right. So the Harvard story. Harvard was the one exception because Harvard is Harvard.
It's Harvard.
You know,
it's Harvard of Harvard.
Yeah, it's the Harvard of Harvard. So I knew I didn't want to play at a smaller school per se, but when Harvard came calling, I was like, all right, I got to take this seriously. And they had followed me on the AAU circuit because they would just go to games. And then all these coaches would always watch us play, even if they knew they weren't recruiting anyone on our team. Like, it felt like every coach just loved watching our AAU team. So, like, Harvard was recruiting, like, some other team. And then if we're playing, they're like, all right, we're done recruiting. Now I'm just going to go watch this team for fun. And they'd start watching me. And that's how I kind of got in touch with them was just on that circuit. But they never seen me play in high school. So when I was a senior, it was kind of like, I don't know what a done deal looks like in the Ivy League, like I said, because they don't offer scholarships. So I never really was offered anything, but like I'd gone to campus, I'd taken the visit, I'd talked with the coaches forever. It seemed like it was pretty close. I was like, all right, I think I might be going to Harvard. And then they came. They're like, we want to come watch you. They wanted to like watch me be the star, basically, because like on my high school team, I was the best player and all that. And they're like, we've seen you on playing with Odin Conley, so I want to watch you in a real game. The lead up to that game, I got in a fight with my coach in practice. Because he said I wasn't rebounding well enough. I was averaging like 7 rebounds a game, and I was a shooting guard. And I remember I think I shot a shot in practice, and I didn't follow my shot, and he got really upset. And then
a shooting guard, you follow your shot?
Yeah, and I told him, like, I didn't follow the shot because I thought it was going in. Like, that's why, like, when I shoot...
Or you want to be back on defense called defense.
He's like, and it's always, like, coaches always do that whenever... They never say follow your shot when the ball bounces, like, to the other side.
Right.
It's always when it comes right back. It's just confirmation bias. That's my biggest pet peeve.
Like that.
So he yells, follow your shot. It turns into this whole thing. Like, I had a really bad attitude in high school. I won't deny that. But, like, I was just really upset about the whole thing because I led the team in rebounding, and he was getting on me about not rebounding well enough. Anyway, we get in this blow-up in practice. He decides to suspend me for the first half of the game that the Harvard coaches were coming to. I told him, I was like... This is my livelihood. Like, you can't do that. Like, come on. Like, I'll run sprints till I die. Like, come on. Like, you can't suspend me.
Who's the coach? What's his name?
His name is Josh Kendrick. He ended up winning a state championship with Gordon Hayward. So he got his vindication as well. I don't know what he's doing now, though. I don't know if he's still coaching what happened. But he was a young guy. It was like one of his first jobs. He was trying to, like, you know, be a, you know,
hard ass.
The hard ass a little bit. So anyway, he suspends me the first half. I'm sitting on the bench the whole first half. We're playing our rivals. Halftime comes. I come out in the second half. I kill it. We win. I think I scored like 17 points in the second half. But when I came out at halftime, the coach, I saw the coach sitting in the stand. The coaches were in the stands, and they had left when we came out at halftime.
No way.
Yeah. So. And wow. I never heard from him again.
That's an amazing
story. So at halftime,
story.
I'm watching him, and he's like just kind of looking at his watch. All this, like the first half, I mean, I'm just kind of looking at his watch, and I'm like, fuck, I want to get in this game. Like, how do I get it? And then halftime comes, and I come out, and I'm like, I'm going to kill. I'm just going to take over and just like go nuts, and this is going to be great. And then I came out, and he wasn't there, and I scored 17, and we won, and it didn't matter. So, never heard from him again. So
how,
but it worked out for me.
So why'd you decide Ohio State?
I applied to Northwestern, Vanderbilt, Harvard and Ohio State. I got the Harvard. I got the you're not declined yet. And then when that thing happened, they promptly sent me a letter and you're like, we don't want you anymore.
Yeah.
I got into Vanderbilt and I did not get into Northwestern. So and then I obviously got into Ohio State. So I was going to go to Vanderbilt, but then just to be a student, like this isn't for basketball. Mm-hmm. Like I should make that clear because mm-hmm. You know, there was no play of basketball whatsoever. I just kind of given up the dream there. And then Greg wanted me to room with him, Odin. He was just basically like, dude, you should just come to Ohio State and be my roommate. And I just started thinking about that more, and I was like, that sounds fun. I mean, I was 17 years old. I decided I wanted to go to Ohio State without even visiting the campus.
So you were 17 when you graduated?
18. I think okay. I was 17. Yeah, okay.
17 so when you said?
Time. Yeah, yeah. So like,
when's
yeah,
your birthday?
17, 18, June.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So you're young.
Yeah. Yeah, so I said, like, I told Greg, like, sure, that sounds fun. Greg was like, let's come be my roommate, and I started thinking about it. I was like, yeah, you guys are going to be great. It's going to be fun. Like, what the hell? I'll do it. And the point is, like, I didn't really give it any thought whatsoever. There was no concentrated, like, yeah, I'll go here. I'll make the team. I'll start a blog. I'll have a media career. It was just like, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll go there.
So you show up in Columbus.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you invited to walk on tryouts?
No, they say
you're on the team. Like, how did it work?
I showed up to Columbus. The first time I ever stepped foot on campus at Ohio State, I was moving into my dorm. Never had been there in my life. And
were you rooming with Greg?
No, that was the funniest part. So I get there, and Greg, like, as we're moving in, Greg's like, yeah. So I talked to the coaches. They actually hooked me up with a better dorm. The coaches, the coaching staff, at this point, I have nothing to do with the team. The coaching staff had still hooked me up because I was Greg's friend. There's perks that come with that. So I got one of the nicest dorms. I was in the same building as Greg, but they did an okey-doke on me, and they basically put him with Conley and David Leidy and Daquan Cook. They were all in like the same like kind of big unit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got put across the hall.
Who are your roommates?
My roommate was a guy who ended up being a manager with me on the team. Jason Weigel is his name. Yeah, he was a friend of Greg and Mike's as well.
So where's he from?
He's from Indianapolis.
Okay.
Yeah, he was one of the
So it was only you two, or did you have two more?
Yeah,
dudes?
It was us two. So it was supposed to be me and Greg in that two-person dorm.
Okay.
And then the coaches were like, no, you're not living with that slapdick. We're putting you over with the other
So
players.
It's a nice dorm?
It's a really nice dorm.
So my first roommate, really nice I showed up at Notre Dame. Notre Dame, they had this deal where your freshman year, you couldn't room with another athlete.
Yeah.
So I was with a guy, Dave Sopko, who's from Ohio.
Okay.
Great dude, super nice, but like, you know, you're throwing, like you're in a, I was a 9x12.
Yeah.
This is like an old school, like build your own loft type deal, right?
Yeah.
And I showed up and I'm like now this is a guy you're going to have to fucking live with.
Right.
Every day for a year or for 9 months, whatever.
It was wild. We had
what year is this?
This was 2006, the fall of 2006. We moved in.
So you guys have internet then, right? Like I'm
we
trying
had
to
internet.
Think.
Yeah, internet like was a thing. Like everyone had Facebook. Facebook had just kind of taken like it was just it was still like
still
just,
MySpace was still big then.
I think Facebook was the big thing. Like it was Facebook, but it was only college kids were on Facebook, so it was like cool. Facebook is like really really cool to be on Facebook.
Here's in Notre Dame, they had something called the T-shirt, the graffiti dance.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, Notre Dame is a small school. It's only 7,500 kids. And when you first get there, all the freshmen, they have you do freshman O, and then they had like they have three quads, or at least back then they had three quads on campus: North Quad, South Quad, God Quad. God Quad is where the Golden Dome is, whatever.
Yeah.
You know. So there's dorms in each of those, and they had like dance
is it actually
floors.
Called the God Quad, or is that
called
just
God
the
Quad? Yeah.
Wheel?
I don't know if it's. I have no
is it
idea.
Official.
I don't know if there's any official.
Yeah, there's a sign that says.
But it was
God
called
Quad.
God Quad. So you'd had a there was a dance floor and a DJ on all three.
Yeah.
And you'd wear like a white T-shirt, and you'd bring like a Sharpie. And if you saw a chick you wanted to like get her number, she'd sign her name, write her name, and then write her like extension.
Oh my God!
Right, that was like these are the days before Facebook.
Yeah,
and there's like a general time limit, Like, you know, that night you could call a chick. Next couple, maybe the next week.
Right.
You could, like, go back and, like, circle the ones that you wanted to remember.
Right.
But, like, after a week, like, if you're calling people off the graffiti dance, like,
I feel like, yeah, like, this is where...
We kind of lost some of
this is where technology has gone bad. Like,
yes.
That is so much better than
now it's
than
just
Tinder.
Like, yeah, now it's just like Tinder, like... She's hot. She's not.
Yeah.
You know?
There's no thought that goes... There's no... Yeah. You don't have to work as hard with Tinder, so I don't think people appreciate it as much as yeah, having to wear a t-shirt and to get a number and remember which... Yeah. You're looking at your t-shirt and which one was... Who was the... Was that the girl with the thing or the other girl? And...
So you got Facebook. Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have to go to tryouts?
No. So what happened was I got asked to be a team manager by John Gross, who is now the head coach.
Wow, and they're good.
Yeah. He's at Akron now, I believe.
Akron,
yeah,
sorry,
Akron. Yeah, he was at OU.
Yeah.
And then became the Illinois coach. He was a family friend of my dad's. We're actually from the same like west side of Indianapolis area. So I knew John Gross and know my family forever, and I got to know like Thad, Coach Mata, and Gross even better like on the AAU thing because they were recruiting. Three of my teammates, AAU teammates, ended up going to Ohio State.
Right.
So every time they come to the games, you know, they talk to me as like I was the angle into like.
Why didn't they go to Indiana?
Mike Davis was the coach.
Okay.
The story there is a fun one. I'll tell you this one. Mike Davis is recruiting Conley. So Greg wanted to go to Indiana. But Mike Davis, all the mail that he sent to Mike Conley, he addressed to Sharon Collins. And it would say like, so Conley would get a letter. It'd be like, Sharon, great game last night. We're really loving your progress. You're killing it. Whatever. And so Mike's dad calls Davis and is like, hey, you're sending us Sharon Collins mail. Like, I can't send my son to a school if you can't even get his name right. And they're like, all right, we'll take care of it. And then like 2 weeks later, Sharon, you're killing it. We're loving everything. And so at that point, Mike Senior,
and that's an administrative. That's like the lowest guy.
The lowest guy on the totem pole. Yeah,
he's fucking it up.
Yeah, and so Mike Senior is like, we can't send you. Like, if they can't even get your names right, because I mean, I don't blame him. Like, you're a 5-star guy and you're the best player in the state. You can't even, you know, or the second best player.
I got one for you. So yeah. We used to get these, and I don't know if they had it when they probably had it still when you were doing it. Whereas they had. You'd get back from like a camp, especially the lower level camps, and they schools would send you like a form to fill out, right? And so by the time I was going to be a senior, I was being recruited by everybody. I had a guy behind me named David Lalazarian.
Yeah,
Lala went to Notre Dame the year after I did. He also transferred, went to Pepperdine. He's a lawyer now in LA. But both of us, we were getting like all these form letters from like all kinds of random schools.
Yeah,
you know, like you said, like the schools that called you, like. I'm not fucking going there,
yeah.
You know? Like, you know, like, not going to East Tennessee. No disrespect to East Tennessee State and what Steve Forbes is doing there now, but I'm not going there. So we would get, or UT Chattanooga, whatever.
But also a lot of disrespect.
Yes, a lot of disrespect.
But at the same time,
it's a thing. When you say no disrespect, there's always something disrespectful, right?
Yeah.
So we had a kid on our high school team named Sammy Grease. Mm-hmm. Sammy was like 5'8", Egyptian. Super, like, crazy amount of both facial and body hair for a kid of that age, right? No idea how to really play basketball, but brilliant and could help us study for any of our tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have, like, Sammy Grease fill out, like, these forms. And so he was getting, so, you know, like, my coach, who's a junior college coach, he'd come in and he's like, I got mail, Gottlieb, you got mail, Lala, you got mail. Like, Sammy, you got mail from West Point? You know?
Yeah.
So he would be on the list. One,
yeah, right.
Okay, so why didn't Greg go there?
Well, because it was...
he was package deal?
It wasn't necessarily a package deal. I think Mike Senior was... Mike Senior was our AAU coach, Conley's dad, and he was just kind of like the mentor to... He kind of was the shepherd of Greg and Mike's recruitment. So
right.
I don't think Mike Senior said, like, you can't go there. It was more of like a, Greg, you're the... Because Greg was very naive. I think Greg... Greg knew he was the number one recruit in the country, but he wasn't always sure like what that meant necessarily. And I think like Mike was, I think Greg would shrug his shoulders and be like, I don't know, coach, seems like an honest mistake. And Mike Senior was like, no, we're like, Greg, you have a brand now. We have like, you're a machine in and of yourself that we have to like shepherd you along and make sure you don't screw this up. Because this was the start. I would say that like Greg wasn't the first, but like that era, my era when I was coming out of high school, this was kind of the start of you're seeing, and you could disagree, you're all, maybe this is a fun conversation we could have, of shoe companies like really going all in on like individual guys, and where I just like felt like it was weird because like we were playing AAU, and even when we were good, it wasn't until like my junior year or so, suddenly like we're sponsored by all these shoe companies, and you see it across like the board of AAU, and you're trying to like connect the dots of how this is happening, to where it used to be. I don't know what did it used to be like. Like
My dad got shoes from Nike very early on because of Sonny Vaccaro.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessary. I don't believe Sonny didn't try and steer kids. They were long time friends.
Right.
And then we were always loyal to Sonny. All of our guys would go, with the exception of the modern day kids, they would go to wherever Sonny, because he left Nike before my, like during my sophomore, maybe my freshman year, he left. He went to, first it was Converse.
Yeah.
He was Converse for a couple of years, and then it was Adidas before my senior year. And so my high school was an Adidas. We got Adidas, free Adidas, whatever. And I did his camp, and I did his All-American game, whatever, just out of loyalty to him. There were shoe companies that were involved. I don't think they were involved more in individual kids.
Yeah.
Whereas after we got done, they started sponsoring programs. And where they got smart was they would hire a coach. Like Marvin Bagley's dad was like the coach of his AAU team.
Right.
And he got paid for that.
Right.
So he became on the Nike payroll.
Right.
And then he, shocker, went to a Nike school.
See, I don't know if did this happen when I, because I guess like I have the self-absorbed view that this was all happening first with our group of guys.
Experience, and it probably hadn't happened in Indiana previously because there hadn't been that collection of talent. Like that's a freaking NBA All-Star team.
It was just wild because Sonny at that point was Reebok, and we were sponsored by Reebok. This was back when Reebok made basketball, so I don't think they even do anymore. We were sponsored; everything was Reebok, and I remember like, by the time I'm a senior, the summer leading into my senior year of high school, I'm flying all over the country playing AAU basketball. We had like six different jerseys for an AAU team. We had black, white, alternate, red, like all sorts of shoes that you could imagine. And I remember talking to my dad one time. I was like, because it dawned on me, like we're taking one of these flights to Vegas, and I'm thinking like, my parents are both teachers. We have no money. Like I see.
But you didn't have to pay?
And yeah, we didn't have to pay any. And I remember thinking like, Dad, are you paying for all that? Like, am I going to owe you like $30,000 when I get older for all the times you flee? He's like, I'm not paying for it. I don't know who's paying for it. He's like,
team like that. So there's a team, famous team in Southern California, a guy named Pat Barrett. He's had players forever. And he had a team that had Jason Hart, who's now an assistant SC, and he played Syracuse in the NBA.
Yeah.
Shea Cotton, who was like, the best player in his class, like Chris Burgess, and who was, top two or three in his class, went to Duke, then Utah, and I was assistant BYU. And they had like one of those, and they played together from like seventh, eighth grade on. And they never came out of pocket. Nike team, and they all went to Nike schools.
Yeah.
It is. Okay, so go ahead.
No, like the point I was bringing this up was like, I felt the shift to turn it back to the Indiana and why Greg didn't go there thing is like, I felt like Greg.
Were they Adidas then, or were they Comp?
They were Adidas.
They were always Adidas under Nike.
They were Nike and O2 when they lost to Maryland in the title game. This is my thing on. I think Indiana needs to go back to Nike to get it back. I think they got to get their mojo back. They got to go back to Nike. That's what I've been on that train, because Adidas doesn't love them. Adidas is corrupt as hell, as we know, and they're funneling everyone to Kansas and Louisville. They don't even love. They got to go back to Nike. They got to or Under Armour or something. They got to find.
Well, Under
Armour
supposedly kids hate Under Armour.
Oh,
know,
really?
Like, right? I don't know. Like,
so
I did go to two Nike schools.
Yeah,
and I like Nike shoes.
Oh, yeah, same. So
I told this to there's a friend of mine actually who's a pretty high ranking Nike guy. I think he's the CFO, Andy Campion.
Yeah.
Okay, so Andy has become a friend, and I said we were talking one day in like the Nike suite, and I know the Adidas guys too.
Yeah.
You know, like all those guys, they've kind of all been around hoop forever, and we went through like an LA Gear. This before you, there was an LA Gear phase.
LA Gear,
where
yes.
LA Gear was buying up all the big programs, and then they were giving free shoes to all the big AAU teams, whatever. And the LA Gear was kind of like Under Armour for a couple years there.
Yeah.
They had Shaq. Anyway, so I told Andy, I said, anytime you're in a meeting and you guys are feeling like where are we in the landscape? I was like, you got to do this test. Go to one of these basketball-only facilities in the summer where professional guys who play overseas, or especially the overseas guys, and college players come and play. Just go, pop in, watch a playoff game, and look at what kind of shoes they wear. Right? It's the what kind of shoes would you wear if you weren't getting them for free.
Right.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And my thing would be like, I do think that the Dames are really cool and they're super light, but for the most part, everybody wears Nikes.
Everybody wears Nikes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like they're unspoken. Like, like Nike dudes can be super, super arrogant, but they have a reason to be arrogant.
Right. Right.
It's like, because everybody still wants to wear it.
Right.
Everybody wants our swag. That's really kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And if they want some other swag, then they either buy that company or they make the exact same thing and then put a Nike logo on it. And it becomes,
right. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's, you think, why? Because Nike thing?
Well, no, I think, so Greg, to me, the point I'd make is, like, it felt like Greg was one of the first guys where these shoe companies, and Sonny in particular with the Reebok thing, said, like, let's sink our teeth into this kid when he's 15, let's ride it out, all that sort of thing. And I think Mike Sr. saw that, so I think, like, but Greg was naive. Greg thought, like, Sonny Vaccaro was just his best friend. Greg thought, like, Sonny Vaccaro just, like, wanted to...
Right.
Like, just be buddies. And I so that was like Mike Senior's role, and I was like, I have to show Greg like the right path, whatever. So when the Davis thing happened with the mail, it wasn't necessarily, you know, it was just more of like, we gotta go somewhere that if they can't even get Mike Conley's name right.
Little things are signs of a bigger and Mike was I think he was director of ops or maybe he was an assistant. I visited Alabama. When I left Notre Dame, I was going to go and transfer and sit out at a place. And then I was like, nah. And so I took my visits. My first visit was actually to Alabama.
Okay.
And Mike Davis was I think the director of basketball operation. Dave Hobbs, been an assistant at Kentucky, was the head coach. And, so I mean, but he wasn't like, he literally never said a word to me on my visit.
Yeah.
Like, I never met him. It was so weird.
Yeah. I don't think we had a problem. We were camp, the Conley Odin Titus camp. There's no problem with Davis, like, as a person. I don't even think there's, like, at the time, he wasn't even considered, like, that horrible of a coach. I mean, he'd come off of the Final Four in 02. This was, like, 3 years later. 05 was, like, when we were the class of 06. So, like, he was getting recruited, like, in 05 or whatever. The wheels hadn't completely fallen off on the Davis era at IU yet. It was just, I don't know. I think the writing was sort of on the wall that you know, he was eventually going to get fired, though, and I think they just really love Thad. I think that's ultimately what it was. Like, I think Mike and Greg both just, like, really, really love Thad.
So you're a manager your first year?
Yeah. So I go when I get to campus, the Thad knew me, Gross knew me. They asked me to be a manager. Gross explained the role of manager as, basically, the way he explained it to me was a walk-on. Like, he's like, if you're a manager, we're going to put you in practice against the guys. You're going to run drills. You'll play scout team. I was like, that seems pretty great. I was like,
you get paid for it too, don't you?
No, yeah, you don't get paid for it
at all.
No, I don't think so. Maybe do it.
Some managers, I think, by your senior year, you get paid. I don't know. So
graduate managers or something like that.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I was like, listen, I don't want to commit to basketball. Like, as I just said, like, I didn't love basketball enough to, like, fully commit, but I still love playing, just not like what it takes to play Division I. So I was like, this is perfect. I'll be able to scratch that itch. I like playing ball, but I don't have to commit to being on a team full time, and I can just kind of pop into practice every so often, whatever. And then I show up, and obviously the manager role is not that. The manager role is wiping up sweat and filling up water bottles and rebounding, and that's all I did every single day. And I was like, this is bullshit. When do I get to make it rain out here? When do I get to play against these guys? And that's what made it worse is, like,
you know all those guys.
I know all those guys. I played with them my whole life.
It's hard.
And I have to sit here and rebound for them and all that kind of stuff. I was like, this is horrible. So I quit that. Like, 2 weeks in, I call my dad. I never quit anything in my life, and I that's how I was raised. It's like, you never, ever quit. If you sign up for something, you don't quit. And I call my dad. I was like, Dad, I got to quit this. This is horrible. And he's like, you're not quitting. You're definitely sticking with this. Be a manager. You signed up for it. Write it out a year. And then I explained to him. He's like, it might get better. Just wait till the season starts. And then the season started to approach, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I just can't. I don't think I'm better than, like, again, it was like the Division I don't think I'm better than Evansville. It was just like, this isn't for me. And it was the same thing with managers. Like, I didn't think I was better than all the managers.
But
it
was
just
better, like, than all the managers.
I'm better than all the managers.
Right.
So we, I ended up quitting that. And then what happened was, a couple guys, like, so Greg was hurt at the time. He had his wrist thing going right into Ohio State, so he wasn't practicing. The walk-on they did have, they played one exhibition game, and he didn't get in, and he got pissed because, like, I guess he was an upperclassman, and he was like, I thought this was my year. I was going to get minutes. And it's like, buddy, you weren't getting minutes before. You're not getting minutes when Greg Oden and Mike Conley come into town, and they're the number one team in the country.
Big
so, yeah, I don't know what you thought. But so he ends up quitting the one walk-on that they had. And then Ron Lewis turns his ankle in practice, and he's got to be out for a couple of days. And they literally had nine guys on the to run a practice, and they didn't even have enough to. So they called me. At this point, I have nothing to do with the team. I'm just a normal student at Ohio State, and I mean, I still live in the same dorm, and I'm friends with those guys. And they called me, and they're like,
"So
hey,
who's they?"
They is Gross.
Okay, Gross calls.
Gross calls me, and he goes, "Mark, we need you to come back." And I said, "For what?" And he said, "We have nine players, right? Nine healthy players. We can't even run practice. We need just like a 10th body just to throw out there." And I was like, you've sold me this lie before, Gross. Like, I need." He's like, "No, I mean, at this time, you're going to actually be able to practice. You're going to actually be able to play." And I was like, "Cool, that sounds fun. And I guess I can do that." And I agreed to do it. I honest to God thought that when I said yes to that, it was going to be until Ron Lewis's ankle got healthy in like 4 or 5 days or whatever. And then they were going to be like, "All right, thank you. You're gone." But I don't know. I said the right things. I did the right things. I must have had that must have been. I guess looking back, I need to find the film from those practices because I must have just been amazing that they kept me around.
What was it like for you to walk into like the locker room the first time you saw your jersey?
Oh my god! It was I honestly like so the first time I wore the jersey was for an exhibition game. So even that was like I was pinching myself because I couldn't believe that I've never had a jersey with my name on the back. Right. Even this is Titus Stitch. I was like, oh my god, this is insane. But even then, even when I was on the team and they're like, no, you're going to be on the team, I thought I was just going to suit up for the exhibition games. And then like once the real season started, I just kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I right. never really like fully appreciated it. I grew up a fan of Indiana. I grew up a fan of Big Ten basketball. I was always a fan before I was a player. I just happened to be like a pretty good player too. So I had just immense respect for like all the Big Ten. Like to be able to say I was a Big Ten player. My mom played at Purdue too. She's a legend. She's in the Purdue Hall of Fame and everything. So my mom was like bawling her eyes out because like her son is like going to be a Big Ten player now, and she's a Big Ten player. And it was definitely like a Rudy moment for sure.
Did you score that year?
Yeah, I scored. 5 points, I want to say. I think I hit a three and had two free throws.
Who was the three against?
Youngstown State. Yeah, nice. At Nationwide Arena. Yeah, yeah.
What was that like?
That was my girlfriend at the time was at the game. She lived in Indiana and she drove over just for the game. And I'll never forget. I it was a deep three too. I think it might be on YouTube. You might be able to find it. I knew she was coming to the game, so I was like, if I touch the ball, I'm jacking it. I have to score, like, because she knew me as like a great player, like, because we went to high school together. Right. So to her, she was, and I was kind of embarrassed that I was coming off the bench and not playing much. So I get in the game at the end, and Jamar Butler just throws an advanced pass, and I don't even bother dribbling. As soon as I catch the ball, I didn't even know where I was. I caught it all in one motion, turned to shoot, and I was like, oh shit, I'm kind of far. And I just like pushed it a little harder, and yeah, it went in, and it was insane. And people went nuts, like as they do for the walk-ons. I was this pudgy white guy that comes off the bench, and like the crowd's going crazy.
So my roommates at Oklahoma State, I had one walk-on roommate for 3 years. Yeah, 3 years. So Rodney Suter was my roommate. No, my last 2 years, because I was only there 3 years. So Rodney was, like you, 1,000-point scorer, Miami, it's spelled like Miami, but Miami, Oklahoma. It's the last town, if you're going up I-44 to Missouri from Tulsa, it's the last town before you cross over the Missouri border. That's where Joplin is.
Okay.
So he's from Miami. He's like a local legend. He went to junior college there at NEO, and he was my roommate for 2 years. And walk-ons at Oklahoma State, like, you get in a drill, you don't get in a drill, it didn't fucking matter. Like,
yeah.
You know, we were never to, the year before I got there, they had the eight guys and walk-ons were in practice and football players were on the team. And we didn't have that. And coaches just like, I remember this, there's a walk-on at Notre Dame who, I gotta remember his last name. And I just remember like, he was gone for like 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden we're like in layup lines against UConn, like, I was like, "Where are you? I thought you quit." He's like, "No, I just had some tests to study for." Like, I told the coaches, like, literally didn't go to meal. We went to like road games, like nothing. And then like all of a sudden, he's like in layup lines, like dunking because he's like a 6'6" white dude. We're like,
yeah.
"What the fuck?"
Yeah.
Anyway, so my boy Roddy Suter, so his senior year, like he was like, "Hey, you got to talk to coach, and you got to be, you got to play with us when the walk-ons get in. I was like, why? He's like, because all the walk, because none of them were like point guards. They were all pretty good. There was a guy named Zach Gazelle, who was from Ripley, and he could score. Like, he was good enough to play. He just gets so nervous.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes walk-ons, he just gets so fucking nervous.
Yeah, it
he would hoop,
a lot,
he would
yeah.
hoop in practice. We're like, coach, he's good enough to play. But then you get in the game, he just gets so tight. So we had him on both wings and, like, our young big guys, whatever. And so they had me go talk to coach. Like, coach, the walk-ons want me to stay. In. He's like, no, that's bull. You just want to stay in so you can get some points. You can get some shots. He's like, run the offense. Like, do you have any idea how hard it is to run an offense when you have dudes that haven't played and all they want and everybody's yelling at them to shoot?
The whole crowd. Shoot. Yes. As soon as you touch it, shoot it. Yeah.
But by the end of the year, we did. And my claim to fame is, like, I've gotten all my guys. All my guys get buckets.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Everybody gets
that's
just
good.
Run.
Yeah.
Just put your hand up. I will not give it to you until if you catch
we'll
it,
yeah.
Let it fucking fly.
Yeah.
Right? Because I am granting you an open shot.
That's great.
Okay, yeah. So that year you guys played for a national championship.
Yeah, we played for
against Georgetown.
Florida. We played Georgetown
in the semis.
In the semis,
which was the matchup of Hibbert.
Hibbert and Oden.
And Oden. Yeah. And they're both in foul trouble in the first
the
half,
whole
right?
Game,
you're like, oh,
yeah.
Jesus, refs.
Yeah.
Can you just give them an extra foul?
Yeah, right.
What do you remember about the Final Four?
The Final Four was definitely my favorite, maybe my favorite experience of my life. It was, I just remember the open practice of having God knows how many tens of thousands of people there watching us. Like I said, this was something that I grew up, you know, like all guys grow up watching it, but like
right.
I grew up obsessing over it. My parents would call me out of school during like I remember your career because that's how obsessed I was with this.
No, I missed school every Thursday and Friday the first round of the NCAA tournament.
I would get called out of school. I'd have a board in my room that I'd have all the brackets filled out. I do our family pool. Like I was obsessed with it. So to be there and like to know that I didn't think people were there to see me, obviously, but like some small part of me, I was a part of this thing that people were there to see, and it was like, oh my God, I am on the stage now. Like I am, and even like during the games, it freaked me out that like it's right. Like I could just go walk out onto the court right now, and I'd be all over to you know, like I don't know. It's just so weird to like be in it. That was always the weirdest thing for me is because when you grow up and you're sitting in your room, it's always like a one-way thing where like you're watching it, but it's not like watching you back type thing. So like as you're watching the Final Four, it's just like it's whatever. And it felt like now the whole experience had turned and was like looking back at me, and I was like, oh shit, this is bizarre. It's very surreal.
When did the blog start?
The blog started my junior year. So what happened was after my freshman year, I obviously didn't play. Like I was fat anyway because I didn't think I was going to play college basketball. So I got kind of fat in the summer and whatever going into college. And then I got in decent shape. And so going into my sophomore year, I thought I had a chance to get some minutes. I wasn't trying to start. I wasn't trying to play 15 minutes. I thought I could get 5-6 minutes a game, just come in spots. We went to the NIT that year. We didn't have a good team. And it was the same story. I might have played even less because we didn't win as much. So, like, you know, I only
got dusting teams, so I don't get the walk-ons.
Yeah. But in my mind, I was like, all right, I knew I wasn't going to play as a freshman on the number one team in the country for most of the season. That makes sense. But now that I'm a sophomore, now that I'm in shape, I'm killing it in practice. I was playing really well in practice all the time to the point that we would run scrimmages, they would take Scott. Like, I would play over a lot of the scholarship guys. Because they would do competitive things, and like the captains on the teams were like, "No, we don't want these bunt." Like I don't want to name names. I know you want me to, but some of the guys some of my teammates are like, "Keep their ass on the bench. Put in Titus. We want to win this scrimmage." So I was feeling really good about myself. But then every time the games would play, it was the same story. It was like I'd only get in if we were up by 40 and there's a minute left. So after my sophomore year, I had the coming to Jesus moment of like, I have to change my focus because like now all of a sudden I did want to play basketball because like, I'd become a much better player. I'd gotten in decent shape. And I was like, if I stay here, something has to happen where like I change my mindset on this whole approach or I have to transfer and like go play somewhere. And I ultimately decided I thought about like when I'm 50, what's a better story that like I played at Ohio State for 4 years. Or that I scored like 27 a game for like an NAIA school, you know? And I was like, I think more people would
care. There's a happy medium
there,
though.
There's probably somewhere in the middle, yeah. But that was how I saw it. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to bite the bullet. I'm going to stick around. Even if I don't play, whatever. But I have to change my mindset. I can't keep like busting my ass in practice and get no reward for this. So My whole focus became like, I'm just going to ride this out. I'm going to have the most fun I can possibly have for 2 years. I'm going to fly across the country and play college basketball and get free shit and all that. And that's why I started the blog. It was just basically my outlet to voice my frustrations of not playing and just make fun of myself. And I thought, like, if I can make fun of myself before everyone else does, I own the power, and they can't touch me. No one could be like, you suck at basketball. I'd be like, I know, I already said I sucked at basketball. That's not a good joke. Like, I beat you to it.
So when did the coaching staff, how long into it did somebody say, like, what are you doing here?
It was, I don't think Coach Mata still really understands what it is or what I do for a living. Like, he's just like, he's very clueless in the most adorable way. Like, he's one of the coaches that's like, he pretends he doesn't know what Facebook is and all that kind of stuff. So, he never really had a problem with it. The director of ops, Dave Egelhoff, who's still there, he called me in his office and just said, like, let's be smart about this. And I was like, I'm smart. Because he knew me pretty well, and he knew that, like, I wasn't that bad. So he was like, let's just be smart about this. But at the time, I should say this too, like, this was before, like, people got canceled on the internet. This was before, like this was, like, Twitter had just started, and people were just saying the most ruthless shit on Twitter. You could tweet whatever you wanted, and no one really cared.
Right.
So even if I would have, like, posted some blog post, I don't think it would have, like, blown up and been a story, and people would have said, like, you know, I don't think it would have really mattered. I think people would have just kind of laughed. So I think they were kind of still filling that out. I mean, this was back when like corporations were having interns run their social media because they didn't give a shit. And I had one talk with the director of ops. He was like, just be careful. Like, just know that you represent more than yourself. That's all we ask of you. And I was like, I got it. And it was never a problem. So they read everything I wrote, and they would laugh about it. But it,
when did
really
you know it became a thing?
It became a thing when Bill Simmons reached out to me, and like, I had kind of built a following. Like, it was like an underground cult thing when I would go around campus and people would say stuff to me, and you know, I'd go on the road and play in Big Ten arenas, and student sections would know who I was and stuff like that. It was cool. But when Simmons emailed me to come on his podcast, this was way back in, God, when was that? 2009, I think. That's when I was like, oh shit, this has some reach to it. Like, people are finding this and people are reading this. And he told me the way he found out about it was from, was it Kimmel? Or then he sent it to, cause I then got an email from Jimmy Kimmel, who was like reading my blog. And I was like, this is the most insane shit ever. I was like, what is going on? So like, when that started happening, it took a life of its own. And then I started getting people criticizing me, which was, it was such a weird thing. Like, I would write stuff and they're like, this one was boring. And I'm like, dude, I'm just like a basketball player, just kind of offering my thought. Now all of a sudden I have this obligation to, like, entertain a crowd, which I did not sign up for whatsoever. It was a wild ride, but I don't know. I think it works out, like, in the same way that your career has gotten you to this point. Like, I think, like, if you don't go into it saying, like, I guess you're kind of different. Like, you kind of did want to do this, I guess. But, like, for me, like,
I did, yes. But you do have the moments of perspective where you're like, fucking house money, like,
yeah, right.
Like, look, I was doing, you know, I left ESPN to do the Final Four,
yeah,
to move to California and do the Final Four,
right?
And I did it really 1 year. The second year, they had me do some shit on the court, some shit outside the gym,
yeah.
But, you know, I'll tell
you.
Want
to be
story.
Billy Packer?
I want to be Bill Packer.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. What I want to be.
Yeah,
I want to be.
Right.
I want to be Billy Packer, And I thought CBS hired me to be a Billy Packer, but I didn't know I don't think they did.
Yeah.
So I was super, super bitter. Like, I remember I was sitting at home, I was sitting at home, and it was like June of 2012. And I had just gotten an offer, like a 5-year offer from ESPN. It was the money that I had told my agent at the time, like, this is the number.
Yeah.
It's like, no fucking way we'll get that number. I was like, okay, but here's how I came to it. I'll do this, I'll do that, that. It's worth this.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to the number, and then CBS, like, matched it, and then CBS was like, okay, there's some other things we'll do, and Final Four, and California, and this, that, and you'll be home in the afternoon because the radio show moves to the middle of the day when the West Coast as opposed to the East Coast. So I remember, like, sitting there with my wife, and I was like, you know, I liked ESPN. I fucking dug it at the time. I had a great house. I had a good neighborhood. What weather doesn't really bother me like it does other people, right?
Yeah.
Like Connecticut, there's some great parts to it. And my wife's like, when you watch the Final Four, you're going to be okay knowing you could have been on that set and you turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no. She's like, yeah, then you have to take the job.
Yeah, right.
So I took the job, and it actually works the opposite way in many ways now. We're like, now I'm like, okay, I took it only for that thing, and then I didn't have that thing. Now I don't have that thing, and it's worse. But then I do get the moments of perspective like, dude, I didn't play at Duke.
Right.
I wasn't an All-American. I didn't go to a Final Four. I didn't play in the NBA. And yet I made it to the set of the Final Four.
Exactly.
Even for a moment.
Exactly.
It was only, you know, I might have fucked it up.
Right.
But at least I did it.
Yeah.
Right? So I understand what you're saying. I do have that moments of like, I'm playing with house money.
Yeah.
If it all ends tomorrow, I've accomplished way more than possible.
I did not go to school to get into media. I didn't, even when I was writing the blog, I didn't start that to get it. I didn't say like this could be a career for me. There's no part of me that was trying to do that. And so, I don't know. I do kind of have that element of like at some point someone's going to walk in here and take it all away from me.
They tap me shoulder and go, "Hey, you're done."
Yeah, and honestly, I'd be like, "All right, I'll just go back to Indiana or Ohio." And
what would you do?
Yeah, I'd teach eighth grade math. That's what I wanted to do with it. Yeah.
Could you tutor my eighth grade daughter?
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I was
careful what you wish
I was a math major my freshman year at Ohio State. I wanted to be a math teacher, and eighth grade is like the right temperament for me because like the younger kids are too young and the high school kids know it all. So I found like the eighth grade seemed to be like the perfect mix of.
You're hireable. We should do more beach several times a week. We'll make it worth your while. Your personal struggles with mental health, well documented.
Right.
What is that like to have your truth broadcast? Like I'm sure at some level it's cathartic, but it's not like, it's really vulnerable, and you're letting a lot of people in who, frankly, don't deserve to be.
I think at this point, yeah, that's the weird part is like being known as the guy who had depression and has depression and all that kind of stuff. But it's been overwhelming how much I've helped people, and I don't say that to pat myself on the back. I say it to shine a light on like how many people have these problems, and I didn't even realize it. Like I never, again, with the same thing, like as I said, I didn't start the blog to have this career. I didn't say this stuff because I was like, now I'll be a champion for mental health, whatever. I just said it because I was like, you know, this is what I'm going through. I just kind of wanted to tell my story and leave it at that. I didn't anticipate people like hitting me up for advice or like sharing their stories with me and all that kind of stuff. But to this day, of everything I've done in my life, my career, anything else, I get talked to about that more than everything else combined. And it's always like the most, I always see it coming. That's what's crazy too. It's like, I'll be at a bar and you see a guy come up and they're like, "Titus, what's up, man? Good to meet you. Good to meet you." And then they'll soften their voice. They look around. They're like, "Hey man, I just want to say that stuff you said on the," but I always sense it coming. Like, right, I'm like an animal when a storm's coming or something. Like you could sense it. Like I sense when they're about to get, they're like, "Titus, what's up?" And I'm like, this guy's going to say something.
Yes.
Depression. I can sense it.
You know, it's funny. Then, so I was in Louisville over the weekend. I took my son with me, Louisville play Carolina.
Yeah.
And he said, and I told my kids about the Notre Dame thing before.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Dad, everybody's so nice to you."
Yeah.
And you talk to everybody. Everybody's so nice. I was like, "Well, you know, they're nice to you in person." I was like, "They're not." It's like, "When are they not nice to you?"
Yeah.
It's like, you know, social media. He's like, "You mean like Twitter?" Like, my kids hate Twitter because my wife hates Twitter. She thinks it's like ruins my life because it can put you in a bad way. So I was like, yeah, I mean, any kind of social media like Instagram, that you say something and they don't like it and they bring up the Notre Dame thing. And he was like, "What Notre Dame thing?" So I like tried to explain it to him. I told him a couple years ago because one of his friends at school had Googled me or whatever when I was on CBS and was teasing about it. He didn't know what they were talking about.
So yeah.
I was like, yeah. So anyway, this is the question that I want to end with, which is he's like, "Why'd you do it?" And I was like, "Well, I went to therapy for it." And
yeah,
I think it was because I thought I'd get away with it.
Yeah.
He's like, "Well, you know, did I like need that stuff? Like, I guess, I don't know. I thought I did." I was like, more anything, I just thought I'd get away with it. So what triggered your depression?
A lot of things. It was,
I mean, because you're painting a picture of two parent household,
right?
College degree.
I think it was just that. It was like I had a quote unquote perfect life, and I was still just, I had so much discontent in my life of just like, I felt like I was kind of put on a track too of like this is where you're going to go. This is what you're going to do. Don't think for yourself. And that's not from my parents. That's not from my teachers. It was just sort of like the outside I mean, I was the best athlete in my school, and I got good grades and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, when you check those boxes, this is what it means, and this is where you should go and what you should do. And I think there was just a lot of that. And I don't know. I honestly wear it all like a badge of honor at this point, because I've come so far, and it's crazy. And my friends will just, like, every so often, my friends, just to cut me down, like, if I do, like, they'll probably do it because I came on this show, and like, I'll tweet something about, I'm on Gottlieb's podcast, and then they'll tweet me a picture of my quote unquote old self, where I was like fat and dumpy and like had, and you could just like sense like the sadness in my eyes and all that kind of stuff. And they're like, we remember who you really are. This is who you. So to see how far I've come in life, I honestly wear like a badge of honor, because I don't know. There were, for, I would say for 15 years, I would go to bed like 15 straight. I'm not even bullshit. For 15 straight years, I'd go to bed, just kind of hoping I wouldn't wake up. And I was never like suicidal per se.
Yeah.
You obviously think about it a lot. Like, you know, would I do it? And I'm like, nah, I don't think I could. But you settle on like, I want to go to sleep and I just hope I don't wake up. That would be cool. That'd be the best way to go about it. And, to be here now, to be able to like thrive and to, I don't know. I love life now, and it's crazy. So I wear it like a badge of honor, because like I said, there's a lot of people that are going through it, and if I can help them out, it's cool.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, that's it for All Ball. Make sure you listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern time, 12 to 3 Pacific. You can download the All Ball podcast daily. In the meantime, thanks for downloading, for subscribing, for rating. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.